You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
This is Kick-Ass News. I'm Ben Mathis. Hey, folks. I know you love podcasts. Believe it or not, there are a lot of people out there who still haven't been turned on to podcasts or don't really know what a podcast is. So help celebrate Podcast Month by sharing Kick-Ass News or any of your favorite podcasts with at least two friends. Or better yet, share us with all your friends on Twitter or Facebook and be sure to tag us when you do and use the hashtag Tripod. That's TRYPOD. Spread the word about this podcast or any podcast. And if you want to do something else to support Kick-Ass News, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com/KickAssNews. Believe it or not, this show costs actual money, and your contribution will help offset some of those costs. So become a part of what I'm doing here by going to GoFundMe.com/KickAssNews and making a donation. Thanks for listening. And now, enjoy the podcast.
From my perspective, I'm a political exile. But according to the U.S. Department of Justice, I'm a cyber terrorist.
Virtual reality is a way to confront PTSD to get past it.
I don't like seeing people abused.
There was nights that I would cry not knowing what to do.
It is not hard to connect with something that's not real.
I'm programmed to love just you.
If you think ISIS has a presence on social media, you haven't seen anything.
Hi, I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass News. That was a preview of Season 2 of the provocative docuseries Darknet, which premieres Thursday, April 6th at 10 p.m. Eastern on Showtime. Darknet chronicles the ways in which the internet has pervaded our communities, relationships, and minds, exposing the dangers of an unregulated, unsupervised digital frontier. Following its eye-opening debut last year, the second season of Darknet takes viewers on sharper, even more unnerving turns as it depicts the perilous consequences that result when the virtual world invades every aspect of our lives, our homes and communities, our money and jobs, and even our bodies, minds, and identities. The series exposes how we unwittingly surrender access to the most personal aspects of our lives out of our dependence on technology and willingness to do anything for convenience. Darknet is produced and developed by the media arm of the cutting-edge news site Vocative. Vocative's proprietary data software mines the deep web, the 80% of the internet beyond the reach of regular search engines, to reveal hidden perspectives, unheard voices, and emerging trends, and enable Darknet to expose critical stories of a dramatically changing and dangerous world. Vocative and Darknet are the brainchildren of billionaire Israeli tech entrepreneur and investor Matti Kohavi. He's the founder and CEO of AGT International, a global provider of advanced public safety and security solutions that provides security services and research in a wide variety of areas, including industrial, urban, cyber, transportation, maritime, border, and corporate security. He's also the founder and chairman of 3i Mind, the company that invented a proprietary technology called Verne, which monitors publicly shared content to pinpoint criminal activities and possible threats to both corporate and government clients. Verne is the same technology used by Vocative to mine data in the deep web for the news that appears on Mr. Kohavi's docuseries Darknet. Today, Maddie Kohavi talks about the mysterious world of the dark web, the digital equivalent of the Star Wars Cantina Bar, where anything goes, including illegal arms sales, sex trafficking, drug deals, child pornography, and forums and chat rooms facilitating hackers, terrorists, and other illicit communities. But according to Mr. Kohavi, the deep web is much more than that. He says it's becoming the world's collective subconscious, revealing society's emerging trends and warning signs. He discusses how his interest in the deep web grew out of his surprise at the unpredicted revolutions during the Arab Spring, and his concerns that the data mining technology could fall into the wrong hands and be used to suppress that kind of freedom and democracy. He shares how the new season of Darknet is broadening beyond the deep web to explore emerging tech issues that will dramatically affect our lives in the near future, including why he says we may be the last generation to enjoy privacy, and why technology may soon make human love obsolete. Coming up with Maddie Kohavi in just a moment. Maddie Kohavi is creator of the Showtime documentary series Darknet, which partners with Mr. Kohavi's news company, Vocative, to mine the deep web for some of the most fascinating and disturbing stories and trends hiding in the outer limits of the internet we don't see. Season 2 premieres Thursday, April 6 at 10 p.m. Eastern on Showtime. Maddie Kohavi, thanks for joining me.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Well, first of all, for those who may not be familiar with it, what exactly is the deep web or the dark web?
There are many ways to identify it and to define it, but just maybe the best way and the best easiest way to describe it is that it's everything which is unindexed. So, Google touches the part of the internet which is the indexed part, And we're looking at the part which is the unindexed part, and that's where some of the most interesting things are happening in our world. You need different kind of tools to be able to look into that part.
And what kind of transactions and interactions, for example, are going on in the dark web or the deep web?
It can be all the things that we all can imagine, all, I would say, the illegal stuff like human trafficking and weapons and drugs and currencies. So that's the kind of things that most of us will expect to, and of course pornography and children pornography. So all those terrible things that we will expect to find over there.
How do ordinary people actually access the deep web? I'm assuming you can't go on Google and just search it. You have to have a special search engine to access the dark web.
Yeah, you need to have the relevant search engine, the technologies and software like Tor, the famous mm-hmm. Tor. What we are looking is not only there, but we're looking at the deep web, which is where you can find all the forums and all the open discussions. And that's actually where I'm much more interested, because revolutions usually don't start in the dark net. They're going to start in the deep web.
Yeah, and do I have this right that 80% of the web is in this deep web that's inaccessible by traditional search engines?
Yes. I mean, it's amazing. It's an amazing figure, right? Everyone is surprised when they see those numbers.
Yeah, it's sort of mind-blowing to think that the internet most of us access is only the tip of the iceberg. The deep web almost sounds like the Matrix or some kind of parallel universe.
Think about it as the inner self of the world. So there is the official world where we actually can find it over the Google, let's say, and that's the world we all understand and see and read. And think about it in psychology as if it is the deeper inside of our personalities, and that's where things are happening. Sometimes they're going to stay there, sometimes they're going to flow up to the surface, but they're still very interesting.
Well, I read an interview in which you described the deep web as sort of a collective subconscious.
You know, we allow ourselves to behave in different ways, in different places, and we have our official behavior, and we have the place where we allow ourselves really to express our ideas, our thoughts, our anxieties, our loves, our hatred, in places that we feel comfortable and we feel that they are safe and that we are safe. And that's what I'm talking about, the subconscious. This is where, so this is the collective subconscious of the human behavior in many times is in the deep web.
Is what you're doing similar to the WebBot project in that you can essentially form a word cloud of sorts that predicts events before they happen?
It depends what kind of events you can predict. I think that predicting is a very large word, because if you're asking me about being able to predict right now what people are going to buy in the stock market or things like that, that's going to be one thing. I'm less interested in that direction. If you're going to ask me what do people feel about democracy, what do people feel about the future of the countries, what do people feel about when they about relationships, what people feel, that's where I'm more interested.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, we are creating models that I can validate them yet. I cannot say that they are accurate yet. But one of the things that we are finding out, which is really a source of reason to be concerned, is that we see that in many countries or democracies, 30% of the population, and again, I'm not going to be standing behind those numbers extremely strong. I'm going to say, I'm just saying this is part of the research that we are doing, but 30% of the populations are ready to give up democracy. They don't see value in democracy.
Wow.
So, and they don't see value, and they even don't understand what it is in countries which are leaders of the free world. So I'm not talking about some kind of less important countries.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where those are the kind of things that we like to look and say, okay, what does that mean?
Yeah.
What does it mean if 30% of the population doesn't find any value in democracy?
Yeah, and I understand that it was exactly that kind of thing that inspired you to start Vocative. You said that it was the media and intelligence agencies' complete failure to predict the revolutions in countries like Tunisia, Egypt, and Syria during the Arab Spring that made you want to tap into that chatter on the deep web.
It's so fascinating, right? Because in the 90s of the last century, when the Soviet Union collapsed, so the explanation of everyone was, there was a wall, and everything was on the other side of the wall, and we can't really know what's happening in Soviet Union, and they kept everything very, 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 very secured, and so when there was a surprise of the collapse of Soviet Union, there was enough explanation and enough rationale to explain why couldn't we predict it. But then when you're talking about the Arab Spring, you're talking about a huge political and human event, and there were no walls over there. I mean, everything was open. People visited those countries, people did business, people saw, you could have read in the newspaper, you could see what's happening in the streets, and yet all of us were surprised. And surprise of that magnitude should make each one of us a little nervous, because it means, what is it that we don't see? It's not just a small event which is hiding behind the walls of a country. Those things were in front of us and we were unable to see them. And this was actually intellectually, that's what triggered my work.
What would you say to those who have concerns that this sort of technology could actually be used to identify and suppress these movements if it were in the hands of less scrupulous countries?
I would say that they are totally right.
Really?
I would say that such technologies as my technology definitely can be tools of the wrong people, and therefore it's critical to be very clear about the use of those technologies. One of the reasons that I created the Darknet show is actually to define publicly the guideline for me and for the people who work with me and in my companies about what are the things that we will never do. So this is a public statement of my philosophical view about the world and about the things that worries me. So you couldn't be more right about the danger of technology.
Well, I know you probably can't reveal who your clients are on the security side, but you're saying that agencies and nations that work with you are not the type of oppressive regimes like North Korea or Iran who would use this technology to suppress freedom and democracy?
In my company, will be extremely very ethical about the customers should be democracies, should be countries that we trust their values and that are looking for public safety. I will know how they use the technology. I will know the way they're going to work with the court and the legal system. And if those are democracies that we feel comfortable with, then it's going to work. You know, one of the things that we created ethically is that one of the centers of our company is in Germany. There's a reason why I picked up Germany, which is an interesting perspective, especially from my own background.
Yeah, as an Israeli.
Yes. When we picked up Germany is because I found Germany to be the country that is most sensitive in Europe in on privacy issues.
Really?
And that's why, right, one, yeah, so in many ways they are very strict about it. And so I think that building part of our technologies in a country like in Germany is also defining the things that can be done and cannot be done.
Well, I would assume that this technology to mine the dark net is very valuable to security and anti-terror agencies. Are there cases where you've been able to mine data in chat rooms and social media, and perhaps it even led to arrests of terror cells?
Yes, they will be. They are using such technology for that purposes. And one of the things that we also decided is to use the same technology for journalism.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a major important philosophical breakthrough that we had, where we said, let's take the same technology and allow journalists to use this technology to tell a story. And I think that was a very different approach to this technology.
You did your service in the IDF working in intelligence, and I heard you say that Vocative operates in some ways very similar to intelligence gathering agencies. So tell me a little about those practices. In what ways is Vocative perhaps more similar to the NSA than the New York Times?
Well, that's not what I said. That's what a journalist said about us. So it looks extremely exciting to think about intelligence organizations. My military service, I'm 54 years old, so it was about 30-something years ago. And we like to say in Israel that every one of us is potentially a general, but I wasn't one. I was only 3 years. I was only 4 years. So I'm sorry I can't really give you a real exciting insight about how intelligence works. I might tell you that it helped me sometimes in getting good dates, but it was always bullshit.
Okay. Well, I wonder, when your company Vocative mines the deep web for stories, is it a little bit like putting together a jigsaw puzzle in that you're picking little pieces of data from here and there and then analyzing it and trying to form a big picture?
It's a great question. And in one of the stories that we have in the second season in Showtime, we talk about robots.
Mm-hmm.
What we found out many times when people talk in the deep web about a robot, they're not talking about purchasing a robot. They're talking about adopting a robot.
Hmm.
The linguistics tool will show us that when people talk about robots, they talk about them as adopting, which means, it might mean, that they are giving them the characters of human. You don't adopt a car and you don't adopt a furniture. And that's where we will start connecting the dots. We're going to say, people talk about the feelings of the robot. I love the robot. I want to adopt a robot. And then that's where our story begins. What does this mean?
Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back to talk more with Matty Kohavi, creator of Showtime's Dark Net, when we come back in just a moment. Folks, whether you're starting an online business or trying to get your existing business online, GoDaddy wants to help. GoDaddy's mission is to radically shift the global economy toward life-fulfilling independent ventures, helping customers kick ass by giving them the tools, insights, and the people to transform their ideas and personal initiatives into success. With more than 62 million domain names under management, GoDaddy is the world's largest technology provider dedicated to small business and the largest domain registrar. They have award-winning 24/7 support and everything you need to build your online business. Whether you have a new idea or an established business, the key to success online starts with a great domain name, and GoDaddy is trusted by 13 million customers, more than any other registrar, with big savings over the other guys. And right now, my listeners can get 30% off new purchases on GoDaddy.com by using the code KICK30 at checkout. That's GoDaddy.com, code KICK30 for 30% off. Again, GoDaddy.com and offer code KICK30. And now, back to the podcast. Darknet doesn't just focus on the seedy side of the deep web, but it also more broadly exposes the perhaps unanticipated problems and solutions that have arisen from the internet and new technology. As someone who has been working in tech for many years, I wonder what developments or uses for the internet have surprised you most?
There are a lot of things in what we're doing today in technology that are resembled to the Industrial Revolution. But I'll tell you what the Industrial Revolution did not do. It did not change the way we love. And the technologies that we're building today, some of them, will change the most important human behavior, which is love. And that's where I'm really getting intrigued and worried.
How so?
I understand that there are going to be cars without drivers, and that's part of the business that we're really working in, and that's one of our major activities as a company, my technology company, is smart cities. It's clear that the cities will be different. It's clear that the behavior is going to be different. But cars without a driver will not change the notions of love. Mm-hmm. But AI can change the story of love. And for instance, we have several stories in our show that talk about love from a different perspective and different aspect. A mother that loves a robot almost the way she loves her own children. That's what she says. A woman who lost the man that she loved, and she created an algorithm that can, she can communicate with that algorithm and as if he is alive, so she keeps her love with an algorithm. A man who prefers to love a doll, and the doll is not just going to be giving him answers to his sexual needs, but actually she's going to talk to him and she's going to be responding to him. So as we were writing the second season, we said, we are maybe the last generation who's going to love human beings.
Wow.
And that's where I think this story becomes interesting.
And I think that speaks to a new angle you're taking with the show in season two, because you're covering a lot more stories about how technology is affecting our lives for better and worse, instead of just stories originating from the dark web.
In season one, we called ourselves the dark net, and we related to the dark net as the physical location in the internet.
Right.
So the idea was we're going to the dark net in the internet, and we're going to pull stories out of there. And this season, the dark net keeps the name, but it has a different explanation. In this season, dark net is the net that we've put on ourselves, and that net is actually, in my view, can be quite dark, because we connected ourselves into the net and we keep connecting ourselves more and more and more.
So in this season, dark net is used perhaps more metaphorically.
You can say more metaphorically, but I would say it's very real, right? Because we live in a more connected society, and connected society is not only social media, but also connecting sensors and devices and machines together.
Right.
And I don't think this is metaphoric. I think this is a real net that we are inside. And our explanation of this net, that it can be really dark, and we want everyone to look at this world and say, okay, what does it mean?
One of the episodes in the second season, Darknet talks to a criminal defense attorney who represents hackers and a self-described hacktivist with Anonymous. Now, they describe what they're doing as legitimate forms of protest and free speech. I'm assuming, as someone who has made his fortune in security, that you don't agree with that interpretation.
I personally, I'm a little conservative on some issues, and one of them is I believe that law is really important in order to create and to keep a safe life and good life. I do think that there is a huge energy right now in the world to create technologies that are taking from us a lot of our privacies and a lot of those issues. And those energies are very powerful because they have a lot of money behind them. Mm-hmm. There's investors, there's money, there is everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the energy to keep privacy is obviously going to be much more weak because there's not enough money behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe that in order to be able to win this battle of privacy, I believe that we need to do it in the right way. I don't feel comfortable with attacking other people, cybers or things like this. I definitely don't feel comfortable about
that. Yeah. And in episode 3 in season 2, you talk about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies, and you discuss something called Hamza Market, where people can buy, I guess, illegal items using Bitcoin. What kind of things are people buying on there?
So, people are going to use the Bitcoin in order to secure their own money. They're going to use it in economies that they don't trust. And they're going to use it in places where they cannot get regular money. So in our stories over there, we had this girl that was a webcam and she couldn't get PayPal to approve her payments. And then so she needed to use Bitcoin. I want to tell you a really cool story. There is a small street in Tel Aviv in Israel, which, you know what, you can remind me a little bit of the Soho in New York. And they really want to keep this street very alive and to keep it the way it was. So they created, for instance, a Bitcoin economy only in that on that street itself.
Oh, really?
So all the vendors over there can use the same Bitcoin and they can sell it one to each other. So I think that this is the kind of Bitcoin is going to be is one of those things that people going to use in order to challenge the governments and the banks and the businesses that they don't trust.
Mm-hmm. What are a few of the other topics that you'll be covering in this season of Darknet?
I think that that we live in a very strange moment. We all know that we live in it, but I want to document that moment. And the moment is that we are the last generation of privacy. And I see privacy, by the way, as human right.
Mm-hmm.
But so what we are doing is we are documenting the last generation of privacy. And we're showing how privacy is moving away in different aspects of our life. So we created 8 episodes. And each episode, we gave it a name, but each one of them starts with the word my. So it's going to be my home, my community, my nation, my identity, my money, my mind. Now, so all of those stories start with the word my. I think that after you're finishing the episode, you're going to understand that maybe we should remove the word my, because it doesn't belong to you if you're going to see the episode. So my home, in the end, it's a home, but it's not anymore mine.
Mm-hmm.
My identity, the way it's going right now, in the end of the episode, it's not going to be anymore mine. And the complex of our stories is we are documenting a moment in human history, and we still don't know what does that mean? But we're documenting it.
Yeah.
And it's complicated because, you know, it's easier sometimes to create scripted stories around it. They're going to be much more cool, much more fun. I can play with them as much as I want. I can take them anywhere I want. Anyway, I can take it to the future with no problem. And here we are saying freeze. We are seeing right now, here is right now a picture, here's right now the way the world is the way the world behaves in a certain moment, in a certain place, this is what's happening. And that's much more complicated, but it's documenting something and it takes away the freedom of creativity to do whatever you want. And that's, I think, a very, and we take this role very, 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 very seriously.
You said that you originally wanted to be a journalist when you were younger, but you decided to go into the security field. Is Vocative and this show Darknet a little bit of you getting back to your first love, journalism?
Every Israeli is a military service mandatory.
And, right.
I had one too. And so I finished my military service when I was 21, 22. And I think that it took about 20 years later that I just went in. My company also expanded its business into public safety and security. But that was 20 years later, and it was more based on our technologies and our software and things like this.
Mm-hmm.
And journalism and history and philosophy were things that always were part of my personal DNA. I didn't study technology. My education is history, and I came in from a house where my father was a scholar and my brother is a professor in history. And that's basically what I was supposed to do when I was young. That's the way I saw my life. History definitely, and responsibility is definitely something which determines the way I do things and the way I care about things. And I hope that they're also being expressed through the work that we are doing in Showtime, through the fact that we're taking our technology and allowing this technology not to be used only by customers, but also by journalists. And we're being asked many times by journalists, why do you use it for journalism? You can make so much money by using it only for financial organizations or things like that. And the answer is, I think this technology should support democracy and should support a stronger world. So mm-hmm. that's basically, yes.
When you look at the mainstream media, do you think that by not tapping into this collective subconscious and what's going on, do you think we may be missing the real news under the surface because it's getting crowded out by too much noise and too many junk stories in the mainstream media?
I definitely do. I think that mainstream media needs to be able to have the tools that the most powerful financial institutions have and the governments have in order really to try to understand what's happening. It doesn't matter how smart we are. The ability to collect a lot of data and to deploy on it very smart analytics and to be able to say what does that mean is going to be a very powerful tools for journalists and media, international media, to be able to tell a story.
Mm-hmm.
When we wake up in the morning and we read all the newspapers, the headlines are almost the same. I mean, there can be a different interpretation to the headlines. Some are going to say, I like it, and some are going to say, I don't like it, but the headlines are the same. As if there is one editor, chief editor for all the media around the world who says, okay, today this is what we're going to write about. And that's something that that should raise a concern in media is, are we all looking to the same direction, and are there other directions which we are totally missing?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of the basic goal that I would hope that I would be able to contribute, I would say, to the safety of democracy.
Well, season 2 of Darknet premieres on Showtime Thursday, April 6th at 10 p.m. Eastern. Matty Kohavi, thanks for talking to me.
Thank you very much for your time. Bye-bye.
Thanks again to Matty Kohavi for joining me on the podcast. One more time, season 2 of Darknet premieres on Showtime Thursday, April 6th at 10 p.m. Eastern, or you can watch it whenever you want with a subscription to Showtime Anytime. For more information, visit showtime.com. And you can check out Matty Kohavi's news site, Vocative, at vocative.com. That's V-O-C-A-T-I-V. Be sure to subscribe to Kickass News on iTunes and leave us a review while you're there. Don't forget to take our listener survey. It only takes 5 minutes at podsurvey.com/kick. You can visit Kickass News on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @KickassNewsPod. and be sure to recommend Kick-Ass News to your friends on your social media. And if you really want to help out, then donate to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickassnews or click on the donate button at kickassnews.com. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickassnews.com. For now, though, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass News. Kick-Ass News is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.